What I wanted to do this morning to start off a little bit, I wanted to play something for you and, you know, ask you what you think afterwards. That was a breath. Okay. How'd you know that was Jasmine? This is true. There's not many bassoon players. I tried to discourage her. She would never do it. Okay? I'll go more into that, but I want you to keep that in mind because all of you had a reaction when you started to hear it, right? You know, for most of us, you were probably, you know, you music majors, I'm pretty sure we're sitting there going, okay. You know, I know the day that she sat down and she played this for me, I was going, all right, it's been 3 years of school. That's where we are. I'm being honest. And I just sat there and I listened. And then at the end, she said, so what'd you think about it? I'm like, okay. And she said, did you notice how everything was coming out? I was like, yeah. Say, what you were hearing was something called multiphonics. I said, multiphonics, what's that? It's when you take a single sound instrument, a single note instrument, like a reed instrument or even you can even do it with your voice, and you play two notes at once. And so it comes out like a little bit different. You're not really expecting it, but it's actually there for a purpose. If you notice and really listen to the tone, to the song, what did it bring you in mind of? You said oompa loompa. Okay. Maybe. Think, what about a Ferris wheel? What about an old rickety Ferris wheel that's doing the best it can, or merry-go-round, absolutely, that's doing its best it can to make its way around and around and around. Every once in a while, it seems like it gets its groove and it's going really well, but then it gets back into its... And it's just kind of struggling its way through. Now, when you think of it that way, all of a sudden, what you heard takes on a different meaning. It's, wait a minute, that wasn't mess up, that was purposeful. Those multi notes, there was a synchrony in it. Today, I want you to start to think about how the good and the bad that we deal with in our lives are both the part, two sides of the same coin. I want you to think about your year that you've had. I want you to think about the good things that happened and the bad. I want you to think about the struggles that you had, and I also want you to think about the rejoicing. I want you to think about the hard times, and then I also want you to think about the celebratory times. Because all of them had to take place for a reason. They were all a part of the masterpiece that God was making for us. But then I want you to take a look at those hard times and I want you to put them in their perfect place because they all do have them. They are there for just a reason. They are there for just a time. And if those hard times have held you down for longer than what they were supposed to, or if they have become much bigger in the picture of what you see, I want you to do something for me that Maxine Waters did. I want you to reclaim your time. I want you to reclaim your time. This morning you heard young Joshua read out of Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 8. And it's the perfect scripture to talk about time, the ending of time. You know, everything has a time and has its own season. At this time of the year, that's normally what we do. We sit back and we look at how the year has gone by. We sit back and we kind of lament a little bit about, you know, hey, it's, you know, it could have been a little bit better. I know my wife's looking at me going, no, that's you. And it's true. It is true. I get to the end of my year and I go through and I pull out my checklist of what was supposed to have been accomplished during that year. And I say, I could have been this if I only had done fill in the blank. And I sit back and, you know, for a little bit of time and I sit in a little corner and I mope a little bit and like, I could have done this and this would have been better if this had happened. And I rarely sit back and just go and look at the most optimistic times of it. I rarely go back and look at, you know, well, what good things had happened. So, you know, my end of the year sometimes is kind of solemn, you know, unless, you know, having some fun with friends and all like that. For you youth, do some of you guys do that? Do you look at the changing time and see it as just another day? Or do you see it as a painful and unfulfilled day? Does it fill you with dread or does it fill you with hope? If it's the latter, today I'm hoping I can help you learn how to reclaim that time. Like I said, with Jazz's piece there, you saw a purpose for every wrong note, which actually wasn't wrong. And you saw how the two pieces kind of settled in there to work with one another. Had it not been there, it would have taken away from the piece itself. During the month of December, we sit here and we celebrate the life of Christ, but do we really look at the multiphonics that were going on even in his? I mean, come on, here you have this child that's being born of an unwed teen mother. On the other hand, you end up with a king. All right, that, okay, fine. You have a prophet being born of a barren wife. Barrenness, birth. How can those things work together? Okay, well, then you have these refugees running to Egypt after a just terrible, murderous time going on in their country. Proven prophecy about where he would be born and where he would learn. Or even in his coming back, knowing what leaders were there and then him being brought up in a place called Galilee. Each little what seemed like misstep of things that were going on in his life either proved prophecy or proved the greatness of who he was. Each one of those hard times had to come so that the good times could be glorious. We all have those good and bads in our lives. Verse 1 says that there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot. Everything has a beginning and an end, both good and bad. But with that beginning, I ask you, what do you see being birthed in you? You know, we sit back and we look at those hard times, but are those hard times just pains or are they labor pains? Because if they're labor pains, oh man, what's about to come forth? You see, if we just take those hard times that they come through, just take those pains and hold on to them, the baby can't come. Now, I know that's physically almost impossible. Because somehow, some way, this baby is coming. And you know what? In your life, somehow, some way, it is going to come. God is going to birth in you what he has for you to accomplish. It's going to come. But sometimes we fight it so hard. It hurts so bad that why is it that I have to go through it? Maybe it's because what's going to come out is going to be something so great, you're going to need the strength to know how to stand it. What's birthing in you this year? Verse 2, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build. When I saw this, I immediately thought about our negative thoughts. You know, there's a lot of things that get killed in life, and I'm not talking about people. But I am talking about the negative things that continue to slow us down and to hold us back. How many of you young people, and when I say young people, I'm talking to all of y'all. How many of you want success in your life? You would like it be nice? Okay, good. But what is that success? Is success just money? Is success just, you know, what is that? I was listening to a inspirational speaker, a motivational speaker by the name of Eric Thomas, and he told this story. He said that a young man walked up to him and said, you know, guru, or not to him, to a guru, and said, I want to be successful. I want you to tell me what it is that I need to do to be successful. The guru said, all right, fine. Come by here tomorrow. You're going to meet me at the beach. Wear your shorts. Be ready to go. Maybe you didn't understand. I said successful, not scuba. I want to be, he's like, just meet me at the beach tomorrow. I got you. So they come to the beach the next day. He shows up. He's ready to go. All right, tell me what it is that I need to be successful. He says, well, I'm going to tell you, but first I want you to walk out into the water just a little bit. All right. So he walks out to the water, probably about ankle deep. Guru looked at him and said, well, just come out a little bit further. All right, so now he's about waist deep. Won't you come out just a little bit more? All right, now the water's kind of up to his chest, and he's kind of freaking out a little bit. You know, it's like, can we get on with this? Because, you know, I'm not comfortable. I'm really ready to run back. You know, he's looking around a little bit. And what he hadn't noticed is that the guru had moved from in front of him and walked towards the back of him. And then had all of a sudden shoved his head down into the water. And so now he's just struggling. He's just struggling in the water. And he comes back up and the guru shoves him back down. And he's just struggling and struggling in the water. And he comes back up and he's fighting his way out. He runs back to shore. He's like, what is your problem? I came here to ask you how to be successful and you're trying to kill me? What's going on here? He's like, wait a minute. While you were under that water, what was the one thing that you wanted? The man said, was to breathe. And he said, my son, there's your key to success. When you want it more than you want your own breath, then you will succeed. But see, when we look at our lives, when we look at our own breath, do we really understand that who the giver of that breath is? When we want something more than our own breath, it tends to become the focus, the pure focus of our lives. But when that focus is the actual giver of that breath, all else that we are seeking becomes more available to us. So many of us young people, we start to move on into our lives. We move on into our year, and we're only willing to take those little small steps to get into the water. We're only willing to take those little small steps to allow the water to get just waist high in order for us to pursue what it is that God has for us. And we think that that's enough. We do it in our marriages. We do it in our schools. We do it in our workplace. We want to go just this far and then expect God to give us what it is that we want. And God's saying, look, I want you all in. I want you all in. I want you to want me more than you want your own breath. I want you to look at the time that I've given to you, and I want you to just breathe me in. And know that the fullness of who I am is going to give you what it is that you need. He's already promised it to us, right? Asking you shall be given, seeking you shall find, knocking the door shall be open to you. That was ours, right? But in getting that, does it mean that we're only to take a spoonful of who God is? No, he's saying just drown me in it. If in your year, young people, you drown yourself in who God is, you will find that the where you're trying to move forward is a little bit more ordered. You will find that when the hard time seems to crash against you, you got a little bit more stamina to be able to stand. You'll see that when the hard grades and the hard classes and the hard teachers, hello, Ms. Lane, appear in your way, you see them less as obstacles, and you see them for what they really are, their pillars that are waiting for you to stand on top of them to say, I can lift you up. I can help you get to heights that you aren't even sure that they existed, because you've only been sitting on a plateau. The zenith is way up here. Stand on my shoulders, I'll lift you higher. Whose shoulders are higher than God? A time to weep and a time to laugh. What have you not let die in your life? Think about that. What have you not let die in your life? We all have habits. We all have fears. We all have anxieties. What things have you not let die in your life? Another guy I was listening to, Dr. Rick Risby, was talking about, I'm sure some of you have heard it, what he learned from a third grade dropout. And he talked a lot about, in this story, he talked about how he had gone through some very, very rough and hard times, how circumstances had just been more than hard on him. He was at a time in his life where he had lost his wife to breast cancer. And it was just he and his little boy standing there in front of mommy's casket and him wondering what was going on. And this third grade dropout, which is his dad, basically just leaned over to him and patted him on the shoulder and said, son, just how you living? How you living? Are you living or are you dying? Are you standing or are you lying in wait? Are you letting circumstances harm you and hold you back, or are you pursuing the happiness that lies there in front of you? Now, don't get me wrong. There are hard times that we all go through. We all lament. We all mourn. And then there's nothing wrong with that. Just this week, or this year, we've had a lot of people that have come and gone from our lives. I know that, one of our brothers here, his heart's very heavy for the loss of someone very dear to him and very dear to us as well. We lost Brother Percy, who was a longtime piano player and musician for us. We lost the Mr. Rollins, you know, Miss Norma's husband. You know, we lost a number. I think back actually to the loss of, you know, a good friend of mine just the other day. I was looking at a couple of golf balls with his name on it and, you know, thinking about his wife who's, you know, out trying to enjoy, you know, her life right now. And it's okay. The tears that come during those times are okay. There's nothing wrong with them. They're there to wash your soul. They're there so that you can remember the good of where they were there. They're there to celebrate the missing. They're there to let you know that, hey, you're human too. But they're not there to keep you stuck in one place for the rest of your life. They're not there to keep you tied down and solemn for the rest of your days. Next verse talks about scattering stones and gathering them. In those times, there's things that you gotta let go away. Throwing them out. Moving them on so that you can move into another place. See, if we allow for ourselves to hold on to those hardships all the time, we never get to walk freely. It gets heavy in our pockets. After a while, we start to stumble a little bit because we can't maintain the weight. But when we scatter those stones, or even better yet, we assemble them into something that celebrates who God is. Oh, then the memories of the people that we lost take on a different focus. The memories of the things that we lost take on a different focus. I've heard so many young youth talk about adulting as if it's just the worst thing that they ever want to get into. Yes, I've been adulting today, Miss. I've been paying bills. I've been adulting today. That means I've been working on the job. And they were seeming to lament the lost youthful days. After working the many years that I have worked, I'm glad for adulting. Because I see an end to all of my toil. I see a freedom that comes with the responsibility. I see an ability that has come with many years of practice and many years of toil, and it's good. It's not something that I lament at all. I wouldn't go back for any. No. See, I still have my hair, so it's good. But it's good. See, the stones that we gather allow for us to look one way or the other. Allow for us to look at either as ourselves or at God. Think about that. When you go home and you look in the mirror, who is it that you see? Do you see yourself or do you see God? See, if you see yourself only, you tend to see just your own limitations. You tend to see only your immediate capabilities. In that view, in that place, you start to focus and look at your future and start to decide whether or not it's possible based upon what you currently know. But when you switch that look and you see God, no, I'm not saying that you are God, but I'm saying you see the God that is there. You see the God that is in you. Then all of a sudden you see a reserve of strength that's back there to not only take care of where you are, but to propel you to where you're going to be. You see, seeking is where we have to be. See, 2 Chronicles says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sins and heal their land. Seek first the kingdom of God and all these things will be given to you. Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead, I press onward to the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. All of us then who are mature should take such a view of things. And if on some point you think differently, that too God will make clear to you. What you seek, you will find. Too often we look with such limited sight. We see right now and what is holding us back right now, what is wrong right now, what is failing right now, and what we can't do right now. I get that staying in the present is important, but when you start to judge your future and rewrite it based on your current inabilities, you shortchange yourself and your future. When you look at that mirror and all you see is you, then you focus too much on the flaws and not the potential. Or you do the opposite. You focus so much on the flaw, on the potential, that you start to lament where you currently are. You stand in your own power and strategize to fight a battle based on assets that are sorely deficient of the task at hand. But if you can see God, then Scripture reassures you that all you need will be taken care of. The prize that you seek will be well worth the effort put forth. I mean, think about the story of Solomon. Here you have Solomon sitting back in the king chamber, and all of a sudden he gets a visit from God. And God asks Solomon, what is it that you want? Now, I don't know about y'all, but that's like Publishers Clearinghouse coming up to the gate and saying, here is the super duper grand prize. Solomon was sitting there with the black card. It was just right there. You know, black Amex, it has no bottom. I can buy whatever I want. You want that airplane? Sure. Here's my card. You want that building? Sure. Here's my card. And you won't get turned down. So here is Solomon sitting here with the world at his footstep going, I can have it all. And he says, you know what, God? Just give me wisdom. You see, where Solomon was looking was not at the image of himself. He was looking at God. He saw that if I seek God and his kingdom and I seek his purpose and I seek what it is that he needs most of me, all this other stuff will come my way. Does it mean that my life is going to be extra easy? No. If you go back through Solomon's life, you see that it wasn't. But you also see that it is ordered. And you also see that he was blessed beyond measure. He didn't have to ask for long life because he asked for what God needed. He got it. He didn't have to ask for riches, but because he asked for what God ordained, he got it. Young people, you don't have to ask for anything of man that's going to compromise yourself to get what it is that you want. All you got to do is ask Daddy. All you got to do is seek Daddy. If you can seek where he is, and what he has for you to do, who He has determined you to be, if even you can just seek the comfort in just sitting with Him, in getting to know Him, in loving Him, though that sounds like a consolation, it's not. It's actually the whole of who you are. Love is not something that is just thrown to the side and it's just a nice have. It's the main gift under the tree. Loving Christ, that's opening up Fort Knox. You get it all. Let me hurry up because I know y'all. A time to tear and a time to mend. Be silent, a time to be silent and a time to speak. Most of the references that when I went over this verse, I saw it was referencing loss. It was referencing mourning. The tearing was the wearing of mourning clothes. And then the appropriate time that you were supposed to wear that and then when and how you were supposed to mend it. The silence was the time that you were supposed to lie in wait and until you were supposed to speak and move forward. And I was like, all right, I get that. But what else is there? What else are you kind of talking about there? And one of the things that came up to me was that, what are you tearing away from? Or in some cases, who are you tearing yourselves away from? What are the things or the people in your life that are trying to influence you in such a way that you're not allowing yourself to go where it is that you need to go? There was I think my wife may have sent this. She was talking about the ex. It was the X factor or the X message. It was basically a message that you were supposed to give to your children that let them know that they texted you an X. It was to let you know that they were in a situation that they just didn't seem comfortable in. And you were supposed to respond in a way to help them get out of it. You know, maybe they were at a party and people are starting to drink and they don't feel comfortable. So they just text you an X, and you're supposed to text them a message back that says, look, you know, something's come up. I'll tell you more about it later. You know, just let people know that I'm coming to pick you up in 5 minutes. And then, you know, it gives the teenager time to, you know, say to his friends, you know, yo, something's happened at home. You know, I gotta go. I'm about to leave. So it never leaves them, you know, like, well, you know, I just don't want to be, you know, with you guys. No, it just leaves them with a total out. And then when they get into the car, they have the freedom to say either how uncomfortable they were or not. Just knowing that, hey, I needed to get out of there and I needed you to be there. Young people, there's a lot of times in our lives where you feel that uncomfortable. And you feel that way because you're sitting back comparing yourselves to what everybody else has or what everybody else is going to think. You sit back and you're looking at your facial structure and wondering not whether it's good enough as it compares to other young ladies. Or you look at your muscle structure and whether or not you have a strength that's strong enough for all the other men. You look at your intelligence in class and wonder or not whether or not you're smart enough to be where you are and or to be with a certain group or to handle a certain thing. You have an out. You always have an out. The out is that you don't have to compare yourself to anybody. You are perfect the way that you are. You have well more than enough to do what it is that you need to do. So tear yourself away from that comparison. Tear yourself away from comparing yourself to others. I wish I had my Bible up here. I'm sure I'll find it. In Ecclesiastes, it talks about how we compare, how the toil of man, I wish I could get that right, how we compare it to others, how we look at our rewards and compare it to others. Let me get my Bible there. I know exactly where it is. It's also because I can't see. it's actually 4. And I saw that all labor and all achievement spring from man's envy of his neighbor. That too is meaningless and a chasing after the wind. See, even God knew what a teenager would go through. Okay. Even God knew what a teenager, a 20-something, a 30-something, a 40-something, a 50-something would go through. They knew that at some point we would start to search and look around and say, you know what? If I just work a little bit harder, I could be better than Gary. And if I do it a little bit more, I got Marlo. I can pass him on the side. And he said, you know what? It doesn't matter. It's a chasing after the wind. We go back to that success that we were looking at. Go ahead and define what that is. And if it's just the things in life, it's a chasing after the wind. At the end of the day, when you look back, you'll look back at your high school career and you won't remember every A that you got. Except on that one really hard test. Calculus, senior year, I got an A. That was memorable because that class was traumatic. But what I remember most was the friends I had. I remember the people that I encountered. If you look around, majority of what you'll remember about this day has nothing to do with what I said. But you'll remember the love that somebody gave to you this day. You'll remember how somebody took extra careful steps to make sure that you got into the door safely. You'll remember just the smile that somebody gave you, or the hug, or the words of condolences. That's what you remember, because you remember the heart of what they gave. You really want true success? Learn how to love. Learn how to love wholly and freely. Success for me on Christmas Day had nothing to do with the gifts under the tree, but that message that was read during the announcements from somebody who had nothing. I wish all of you could have been with me that day. I wish you all could have gone and delivered gifts with us that day. Don knows. Poor Baku got mobbed. We walked into this one young lady's house. All right, not young. She's probably about 75 years young. And he dropped the gifts off. You know, one on the table, the other on the food by the tree. And this woman just grabbed him. So here is all 6'1" of him and all of at least 5'5" of her. And she's just, baby! Thank you so much. That was success. Because that was the fullness of love. One more, y'all, now get out your way. There's a time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. Our ability to see both sides gives us the capacity to remain in grace when offenses occur from within and from without. We fight hard at the same level that we love. You know why wars are so intense? It's not because the cause is just so much. It's because the belief in that heart is so hard. It's so deep. It's so ingrained. It's like it's life itself. You know why divorced couples fight so hard, so much? It's because they really did love that deeply. So at the end of the day, in many cases, they're fighting, trying to equal out that amount of love that they once had. But let me tell you something. If you can fight that hard on the outside of it, oh, how much more love are you going to have if you can fight that much on the inside? You see, sometimes in a fight, we start to give up. We start to think, you know what? This is just too hard. I can't handle where I am right now. I can't handle the path in which it's going. It's just not worth it. But again, that's because you're looking in the mirror at yourself. You're not seeing where God is on this. Because on the other side of what has been given to you, is your opportunity to teach love in the best way possible. On the other side of this is your ability to do God's bidding to the one that he has given you to love most. That goes for friends. That goes for family. That goes for children. I know right now I am going through a time where life is changing. The baby of the family is finding his independence and is starting to move further and further out. And with each step, I am kicking and screaming. The oldest is out and about and she's figuring out what it is that she wants to do and not necessarily depending on my advice. Kicking and screaming. And it's changing. you're going to want them gone. I know that. But then I look at what it is that God has already placed inside of each one of them. I look at the time as it has passed by. And I notice that my time as manager, as provider, as number one gatekeeper, as the big, bad, strong Superman is starting to pass. And that now they're growing to become their own providers, supermen and women, ready to conquer this world all on their own. And the time for me is changing. It's changing in such a way that now I get to claim it a little bit more for myself. It's changing in a way that now I get to maybe spend a little bit more time with the person that said that they would be with me until my end of my days. And I had to say, well, Father, thank you for allowing me to embrace the time. Young people, your time is a little bit different than mine. You're on the precipice of something great, whether it be the beginning of high school, whether it be the end of high school, whether it be the end of college, whether it be the beginning of a new career. You are at that level, ready to take your next step. Don't let anything preoccupy your time. Don't let anything hold you in such a way that you are unable to step forward in what it is that God has prepped for you. Instead, look it dead in the eye. Grab it by its skinny throat. And say, I am reclaiming my time. I am reclaiming my time. Because it was not given to be squandered. It was given by God to be used in His fullness. Reclaim your time. Reclaim your time. Amen.